We live in a time of great skepticism. The Bible is challenged on every hand. And in this age of science, people don't believe, more and more people don't believe that the Bible is inspired by God. And 1 Peter 3:15 says that we need to sanctify ourselves, to always be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks a reason for the hope that is in us. And so we need to be ready to answer the skeptics. And we also need to have a firm faith within ourselves that the Bible is God's Word, and that Jehovah is God, and that Jesus is God's Son. And that's where the study of evidences really helps. And especially, in my opinion, the study of fulfilled prophecy. That, to me, is the most powerful line of evidence to support our faith. In Isaiah 44, as Brian read in class this morning, beginning in verse 6, "Thus says the Lord, the King of Israel and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts, I am the first and I am the last, and there is no God besides me. Who is like me? Let him proclaim and declare it. Yes, let him recount it to me in order from the time that I established the ancient nation. And let them declare to them the things that are coming and the events that are going to take place. Do not tremble and do not be afraid. Have I not long since announced it to you and declared it, and you are my witnesses? Is there any God besides me? Or is there any other rock? I know of none." God through Isaiah is saying to these idolatrous Israelites, your gods cannot tell the future, so they're not real. But Jehovah, he can tell the future. And so he's God. He's the only God. He's the only rock. What a powerful passage. What I want to do in today's lesson is take what I believe is one of the most powerful prophecies in the Bible, and that is the prophecy of the fall of Babylon, and look at its fulfillment so that we might strengthen our faith. And this passage we're going to look at is in Isaiah 13, verses 17 through 22. Now, I should say this before we go any further. I heard a sermon years ago by Farrell Jenkins. A lot of you know who he is. He's a well-known preacher who preaches in Tampa. And he preached a lesson on this topic from this passage, and it so impacted me that I took that lesson and I kind of shortened it and I changed it up and added some of my own things to it, and it became this lesson. So I wanted to just go ahead and tell you that that's the original source for the outline I'm giving you today is from Farrell Jenkins. Now, before we can get into Isaiah 13, we need to do quite a bit of background to kind of set things up. And so let's start by talking about the Babylonian Empire. The Babylonian Empire was the world power for 87 years. So Babylon became the world power in year 626 BC. 626 BC, and for the next 87 years, was the dominant world empire. Now, Babylon was an empire before that point, when they became the world empire, but that really 626 is when they stepped on the stage as the dominant world force, right? Here's a map showing the huge swath of land that that Babylon possessed, and you can see where the city of Babylon, the capital, was located there on the Euphrates River. Now, if we were to take this map and overlay it on a modern day map, just to give you an idea of the land that this empire possessed, it would look like this. And so the Empire of Babylon took up the entire country of Iraq, part of Iran, a good portion of Saudi Arabia, all of Syria, part of Turkey, all of Cyprus, Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, and also I forgot a little Kuwait down there by the on the Persian Gulf, and then part of Egypt. So just again, a huge, powerful empire. And again, the city was located on the Euphrates River, pretty close to modern-day Baghdad in modern-day Iraq. The city was magnificent. This capital of the Babylonian Empire was a magnificent city. I'm going to show you some images to help impress this fact upon your mind. This is the This is the processional way leading to the Ishtar Gate. This is a model. The Ishtar Gate was the eighth gate leading to the inner city of Babylon. The eighth. So there were more, right? And it was just absolutely stunning. The processional way was lined with walls showing about 120 lions, bulls, dragons, and flowers on enameled yellow and black glazed bricks. Just would have been a beauty to see. This is a reconstruction of the lower Ishtar Gate. So there was the upper, which was much larger. The lower has been reconstructed, and it is at a museum in the Pergamon Museum in Berlin. And it was, again, just stunning. The gate was covered in the semi-precious stone lapis lazuli. And parts of this gate are still original to what was actually there. And other parts were reconstructed to fill in the parts that were destroyed and so forth. Daniel probably saw this very gate. He was alive at that time. Again, here's a picture of that model, and you can see the lower Ishtar Gate that we just saw a reconstruction of, and then the upper Ishtar Gate behind that that is much larger. The city itself was just a modern marvel. We don't really know exactly what the city looked like, but this is an artistic rendering of it, looking almost heavenly. In the background of this painting is the artist's idea of maybe what the Hanging Gardens might have looked something like. Now, the Hanging Gardens were the seventh wonder of the ancient world. And we don't know exactly what it was like and what it looked like, but we do know it was some kind of a tiered structure that pumped water to these different levels. This is hundreds of years before Christ, that they had running water in Babylon. Pretty phenomenal. Here's another artistic rendering of what the Hanging Gardens might have looked something like. And here's yet one more. So I'm just trying to impress upon your mind how really amazing this city and this empire was that Isaiah is prophesying is going to fall. And he was really given this prophecy before Babylon reached its prime. Right, way before it reached its prime. When did Isaiah make his prophecy? About year 725 BC. Now, to give you some point of reference, that's about 100 years before Babylon becomes a world power. And once Babylon becomes a world power, it's close to 90 years, a little less than 90 years until Babylon actually falls. So if you kind of do the math there, Isaiah is making this prophecy 186 years before Babylon actually falls. It's going to be in year 539. Some say 536, but I think 539 is most likely the date. So let's, having looked now at the background, let's read this passage in Isaiah 13, and we'll begin reading in verse 17. Behold, I am going to stir up the Medes against them, who will not value silver or take pleasure in gold. And their bows will mow down the young men. They will not even have compassion on the fruit of the womb, nor will their eye pity children. And Babylon, the beauty of kingdoms, the glory of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It will never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. Nor will the Arab pitch his tent there. Nor will shepherds make their flocks lie down there. But desert creatures will lie down there, and their houses will be full of owls. Ostriches also will live there, and shaggy goats will frolic there. Hyenas will howl in their fortified towers, and jackals in their luxurious palaces. Her fateful time also will soon come, and her days will not be prolonged. Let's take a few minutes here just to kind of break this passage down. We're going to look at six elements from this passage. The first one being Babylon would be defeated by the Medes. Now, we know from history that that's exactly what happened. Babylon fell to the Medo-Persian Empire when Cyrus the Great came in and took the city in 539 BC. it's not only amazing that Isaiah tells us Babylon's going to fall, when maybe nobody would have guessed Babylon would fall. But he tells us who they're going to be defeated by. And of course, we saw Cyrus the Great mentioned in chapter 45 of Isaiah in Brian's class by name. I'll talk more about Cyrus in a minute. Second aspect of this prophecy is Babylon's overthrow would be as Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, you Bible students know that in the book of Genesis that Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed with fire and brimstone. And we don't know where Sodom and Gomorrah were located, but the best guess is probably somewhere under what is now the Dead Sea. The destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah was probably what became the beginning of the Dead Sea. And so what does it mean that Babylon would be overthrown like Sodom and Gomorrah? Well, it doesn't mean Babylon would be destroyed with fire and brimstone, but it means it would never be inhabited again. That's the point. And that's the very next thing that Isaiah says, that Babylon would not be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. You see that there in verse 20. And by the way, Jeremiah 51:37 says that Babylon would become, quote, a heap of ruins. A heap of ruins. Just a wasteland. Just a pile of rubble. Now, I want you to think about how unique this prophecy is and unusual. Usually what would happen in ancient times when a civilization was destroyed or taken captive, that the people who came in to replace that civilization would just level the city, destroy all the buildings, build on top of it their own city, and then eventually when that civilization was destroyed, the next civilization would do the same and level that city and build on top of it, and you just had one civilization on top of another. Sometimes you would have as many as 20 civilizations. That's why when you see these ancient sites that are no longer inhabited, we call it a tell, and it's just a mound, because they kept building on top of one another. That's what you would expect. That's what normally would happen. Isaiah says that's not what's going to happen to Babylon. It's never going to be inhabited again. It's not going to be lived in from generation to generation. It's pretty amazing. The fourth aspect of this prophecy is the Arab would not pitch his tent there and shepherds would not drive their sheep there. The idea of that is not only would people not like build buildings and make permanent dwellings and stay there permanently, not only would that not happen, but you wouldn't even have people coming and staying there temporarily. In 1971, Farrell Jenkins went to Babylon and he tells about how the local people would talk about, you know, nobody drives their sheep on the ancient side of Babylon. And a lot of the locals, like, they don't even know why. It's almost just like superstition. But they don't do it. They don't do it. And he heard someone talking about how there was a man who wanted to shoot footage of himself driving some sheep on the ancient side of Babylon, you know, just to kind of make a point. But he wasn't allowed to do that. He wasn't allowed to do that. Now, of course, this prophecy doesn't mean no single human being will ever drive a sheep there on the ancient site. And if he does, then this prophecy is null and void. No, that's not what it means. But it just means that's not the sort of thing that would happen there, because it would just be neglected. The land would just become a wasteland. That's the point. Fifth aspect of this prophecy is wild animals would inhabit the city and dwell in these citadels and these royal palaces. Now, I want you to think also of how unique that aspect of the prophecy is. Again, what normally would happen when one power comes and overtakes another power? They destroy the cities. I mean, they burn them to the ground. It's wiped out. Right? Isn't that what Jesus said would happen to Jerusalem when he prophesied of the destruction of Jerusalem, that not one stone would be left upon another? And indeed, that prophecy came true. Jerusalem was just totally devastated. Well, if wild animals are going to inhabit the royal dwellings, then that means the royal dwellings have to be left standing. How would Isaiah have known that that's what's going to end up happening? And we're going to show and talk about Cyrus. Cyrus, he didn't come in and just absolutely destroy the city. He left the structures standing. And the sixth aspect of this prophecy is Babylon's fall would come soon. Now, we talked about that it would happen in 186 years from when Isaiah made the prophecy. That's a long time to us. But in the overall arc of history, that's just a very short period. Now, what I want to do is I really want to talk about the fulfillment of this prophecy. And we're just going to kind of trace through history and see how this prophecy came.